Side 6, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 219. Bucko grabbed his cloak and pushed through the crowd, knocking creatures this way and that in his haste to flee the scene of his disgrace. Jubilation reigned. Dottie was swept shoulder high and carried around the ring several times. Stamping, whistling, and shouting, the crowd cheered her to the echo. Girth and Fleet Scott waved to her as she was borne past them. The old hare was overjoyed.
"I say, good show! Absolutely top hole performance from the young'un! Hey, Girth, what?"
"Our Miss Dot wind fur and squares, But she'm have to do what and she'm be told, and not go a-gettin' swell at it. He can be still girtly dangerous,
When the shouting had died down, Lord Brocktree refused numerous offers for Dottie to attend feasts and parties in her honor. He whisked the hare maid back to their camp beneath the willows. Deaf to her protestations and appeals for food, Brocktree and Gren ordered her to bed down in a shrew log boat. Moreover, they posted sentries on the stream bank to ensure that she did as she was told. Logalog Gren was as stern a taskmistress as any badger.
"You get some sleep now, young'un. Forget food. As of dawn tomorrow, you're going to wish you'd never seen drink or victuals. The contest goes from sunrise to sunset. 'Twill be a long day for you, so close your eyes. You gwassum, keep your eyes open, or you'll answer to me."
Southpaw and Bobweave had been missing since the end of the bragging contest. Gren joined the others on the stream bank as supper was served.
"Are those hare twins back yet?"
Baron Drucko peered out into the darkness.
"No sign of 'em yet, Marm. You know hares. They've probably gone off to some celebration or other."
Gren looked to Merklewort.
"Celebration?"
The hogwife touched her snout knowingly.
"Don't let our big words fool you, Marm. Drucko means they've gone off to a party." "Oh, no, they haven't. Here they come now."
Southpaw and Bobweave slipped into camp and helped themselves to supper.
"Super duper! Scones with strawberry preserve, what? And hot mull, penny cloud, and bulrush cordial. I say, you chaps certainly know your victuals from your vitals, hey?"
Girth tapped his digging claws impatiently.
"Did he get yon job, zers, tellusons?"
The hare twins laughed, as if sharing a secret joke.
"Oh, the job's waiting on table, you mean. I'll jolly well say we did, eh, South? Rather. That old head cook'll do absolutely anything for 3 flagons of pale cider, what?"
Drucko waddled angrily over to them.
"So that's what's happened to me fine pale cider. All 3 flagons. I was saving that for me season spike day."
Merklewort clipped one of his head spikes neatly with her axe.
"Stop moaning, Drucko! You'll wake Skittles. Listen, if and we want the air maid to win, we've got to make sacrifones."
Fleet Scott chuckled.
"Aye, and some sacrifices too, Marm."
Merklewort nodded sagely.
"Them too."
Brocktree took off his sword and lay down by the fire.
"Good. I hope this plan of yours and Ruff's works out, Gren."
Unsheathing her rapier, the Gwassum chieftain stuck it in the ground and lay down next to it.
I hope so, too. 'Tis costing the Gwassum their last keg of old plum and beetroot wine."
Ruff chided her.
"Oh, come on, Gren, stop whining about your wine. Ho-ho, that's a good 'un, whining about wine."
But Gren did not see the joke.
"We've carried that keg with us more seasons than I care to remember. There ain't a wine like it in all Mossflower. Ask any Gwassum. One drop of it can cure any ailment of head or stomach. It can clear up coughs, sniffles, and colds in the wink of an eye. Take my word for it."
The hare twins shared the last of the scones.
"Should do the trick, then, what? Aye, provided Miss Dottie knows her blinking lines."
24. Dawn arrived bright and sunny. Ruro shielded her eyes as she glanced skyward.
"More like Midsummer's Day than the second day of the season. What thinkest thou, Fleetscut?"
"Going to be what we hares call a bloomin' scorcher, Marm."
The old hare turned to Dottie as she walked with her friends to the feasting challenge.
"How do you feel today, young miss? Chipper, what?"
The hare maid's reply was summed up in two fervent words.
"Flippin' famished!"
Fleet Scott stared at her sympathetically.
"I know exactly what you mean, miss. But remember, pace yourself. Don't go wallowing in there and scoffing like a gannet in a 10-season famine. Cool and jolly well calm. That's the ticket for you, my girl. Cool and calm."
The crowd had already gathered around the arena, where they parted to allow Dottie's party to enter the ring. Bucko was already there, surrounded by supporters. His minions had spent most of the night planting tales of provocation, enlarging the insults to their king until it appeared to the gullible ones that he was the injured party. A table with two chairs was laid in the center of the ring, bare save for two plates, two goblets, and cutlery. Bucko was already seated, and Dottie took her place at the table's far side. Bucko tilted his chair back onto two legs and smiled sarcastically. "Och, weel, here the lassie is. Better late than never, eh? Don't weep now. I will nae raise a paw to ye, pretty one. But mind, I'm wise tae all your wee tricks noo, ye ken?" Dottie shook out a clean kerchief, of which she had brought a goodly supply to use at table. She greeted him civilly.
"Good morrow to you, sir. I hope you're in good appetite."
"Dinna fret yoursel, lassie. I could eat every morsel yon server's put up for both of us. Aye, and still go hame and enjoy my dinner."
Dottie carefully wiped the rim of her goblet, not looking up.
"You can? Oh, that is nice to know, sir."
Further conversation was curtailed as the bankbowl referee entered the ring, followed by a line of servers pulling trolleys laden with food and drink. His considerable voice had lost none of its volume.
"Hearken to me! Attend, all creatures! Today is the feast and challenge! Choice of victuals is left to the contestants, as is choice of drinks. No wasting of food or drink by spitting out or throwing away. The contest will take place until sunset, or until one or t'other contestant is unable to finish. Let the feasting begin!"
The servers began loading food onto the table. Southpaw set lots of salads, both fruit and vegetable, on Dottie's side and winked furtively at her.
"Good luck, miss."
Bob Weave tapped the keg of plum and beetroot wine, filled Bucko's goblet, and came around to serve Dottie. The hare maid covered her goblet with a paw.
"I'll take water or cold mint tea, if you please. That wine looks far too jolly strong for me."
Bucko swigged from his goblet and smacked his lips.
"By the mountain rocks, that's a good drop of stuff. Ach, a shame that's too jolly strong for the wee lassie. But I'm a king of hares, and nothing's too strong for Bucko."
He piled salad, a wedge of cheese, and an onion and leek turnover on his plate and dug in eagerly. Dottie could tell that he, too, had been fasting. She piled salad on her plate and forced herself to eat at a normal rate, though the 10 chews per mouthful routine that her mother had enforced at home was too much for her. Bucko quaffed his wine and signaled for a refill. With lettuce leaves, watercress, and scallions hanging from his mouth corners, he gulped the lot, waving his fork at Dottie.
"Nibble away there, pretty missy. I'll show you the way a king eats. Oomph! This is raw wine. Suits me fine. You not fancy a dram of it, ma pretty?"
Dottie dabbed her lips with a kerchief.
"No, thank you, sir. I prefer mint tea."
Bucko held his goblet daintily and mimicked her.
"I prefer mint tea, sir."
"Ach, away with ye, ye wee fuss budget. Here, new, watch how a wild March Hare warrior eats."
He bolted down the wedge of cheese, tore apart a warm rye farl, stuffed it in his mouth, and washed the lot down with another goblet of wine before attacking his turnover. Dottie was so hungry after nearly 3 days that she almost did likewise. However, she checked herself at the last moment, allowing Southpaw to serve her some sliced apples. By mid-morning, Dottie was still maintaining her sedate pace, though she had eaten a latticed pear tart, some gooseberry crumble with meadow cream topping, 2 plates of vegetable salad, and a plate of fruit salad, which was only about a quarter of what King Bucko Big Bones had downed. His supporters were yelling encouragement, egging him on.
"Ye show her how 'tis done, sire! Aye, scuff her under the table, your majesty!"
Bucko dug his spoon into a steaming apple sponge pudding.
"I'm vera partial to apple sponge. Here, server, bring me yon pitcher of custard so I can pour it over this."
In the crowd, Juka murmured to Drucko,
"Keep silent now. Don't encourage her to eat fast. Leave that to yonder big-boned fool."
Drucko could not help shaking his head in admiration.
"By the spike, that long-ear king can scoff, though, no doubt about that. The beast's a glutlet."
"You mean he's a blutton, ain't I right, Ruff?"
Ruff nodded, knowing it was useless to argue.
"Correct, Marm. Look, Bucko's calling the referee over."
The officious bank bowl listened as the king registered his complaint.
"I'm fair sweatin', ye ken. Yonder sun's beatin' noon on my haid like a furnace. Can ye no bring me a sunshade?"
The referee went to the ringside and consulted with several other pompous-looking bank bulls. After much paw-waving and arguing, the huddle broke up and he returned to the table.
"I'm afraid there's nothing in the rules that says you can have a sunshade, sire."
Bucko was forced to eat on as he questioned the decision. He swigged wine and set about a heavy fruitcake.
"Weel now, my good feller, is there anything in yon rules which states that I cannot have a sunshade?"
Bucko stole one of Dottie's used kerchiefs and mopped at his brow while the bank bowl considered the quandary.
Yes, well, tell you what I'll do, sire. If the young miss requires a sunshade, then you shall both be entitled to have one. But if and she don't, sire, then I'm afraid you'll have to do without the sunshade, sire. Miss Dorothea, do you want a sunshade, miss?"
Dottie nibbled a woodland trifle thoughtfully.
"Not really, thank you. 'Tis far too nice a day. Actually, I quite enjoy the early summer sun. Don't you, sir?"
The bank bowl shrugged apologetically to Bucko.
"There you have it, sire. No contestant shall have unequal advantage of the other. You'll have to feast on. Sunshades are out, I'm afraid."
Bucko sprayed cake crumbs as he glowered at his opponent.
"I'll still beat you, wee Miss Prissy Paws!"
He downed another 2 goblets of wine, cold from the keg, thinking it would cool him down. It was midday. The sun was beating down on both contestants. Dottie was full. She did not want to look at, smell, or taste any more food that day, but she carried on, keeping up a good front, as she had been instructed by her friends. She marveled that Bucko, hot and perspiring as he was, carried on bolting down huge quantities of food. He ate indiscriminately now, not choosing one thing over another. Pies, puddings, breads, salads, flans, and pasties were devoured without favoritism. He was slopping the wine about quite a bit, but still going at it. Bucko, like all March hares, was unpredictable. He was wolfing his way through a strawberry shortcake when he paused and winked at Dottie.
"You can nay defeat me by consuming your victuals slow. Ho, ho, ho! I'm watching you, pretty one. Weel now, 2 can play at that wee game, missy. I can eat as slow as ye. Aye, and still be settin' here tonight at sunset."
Dottie put aside her mint tea and chose a small almond tart. For the first time, Bucko noticed that she appeared slightly disturbed. She fussed about wiping her spoon.
"Then do so, sir. 'Tis no concern of mine at what rate you fill your flippin' face."
Bucko grinned triumphantly and began chewing his food slowly. He drained his goblet leisurely and picked up a honeyed scone. Slowly he chewed it, ever so slowly, washing it down with lingering drafts of wine. Shortly before mid-afternoon, most of the onlookers moved into the willow shades on the stream bank. Dottie plodded on with a single slice of dry bread, hating the very thought of food, her appetite completely sated. Southpaw and Bob Weave ignored her, focusing all their attention on Bucko, refilling his goblet, heaping up his plate, leaning over him as they did and yawning. Bees buzzed somewhere nearby. Not a breeze disturbed the hot noon air. The remainder of the crowd at the ringside had fallen silent. Then the eyelids of King Bucko Big Bones began to droop. His head started to nod forward onto his chest, and a morsel of wild cherry turnover slipped from his half-open mouth. Bob Weave winked at Dottie. The hair maid held her breath. Bucko's half-filled goblet toppled gently over onto the tabletop. He did not seem to notice. The king's eyelids drooped lower, lower, then closed softly. His ears flopped forward, and he started to snore. Dottie continued eating as silently as she could, nibbling on the same slice of bread. After what seemed like an age, she saw Lord Brocktree stamp heavily across to the referee. Blinking, as if he himself had not been caught napping, the bankbull struggled upright.
Ahem. You shouldn't really be here in the ring, sire.
Brocktree nodded in solemn agreement. I know, sir, and I apologize. But from this angle, you can hardly see that one of your contestants has stopped eating.
Where? What? Stopped heating, you say, sire?
The bank bull waddled anxiously across to the table. Dottie stopped eating her bread to point at Bucko.
I'm terribly sorry, but this chap's been like that for quite a while now. Would you wake him, please?
But Bucko could not be wakened. His head fell forward onto an apple pie, and he lay there snoring lustily. The bank bull was extremely upset. He climbed onto the table, taking care not to tread on any food, and shouted,
Miss Dorothea, Miss Dorothea, the winner!
He went on to roar about how the king had forfeited the day by not being able to continue, quoting chapter and verse of the rules set down by Bucko himself, and calling on the other bank bulls to bear him out as witnesses. King Bucko slept on, oblivious of what was going on around him. A crowd of mountain hares lifted him onto a food trolley and bore him off, still snoring, with his cheek resting in an apple pie. Defeated. Fleet Scott and the Hare Twins set about demolishing the remainder of the feast. Dottie tried not to watch them, her eyes glazing over in disgust.
Yerg! How can you dreadful savages even think of food? I never want to see another flippin' pie, bloomin' puddin', or blinkin' salad again in my young and fatally beautiful life, do you hear? Get all victuals out of my sight!
The trio obeyed her instructions with alacrity.
Getting these painful reminders out of your sight, miss. I say, don't hog all that trifle, old lad. Rather! We'll try not to prolong the agony, miss. Pass the scones and honey, will you, Fleet? Pass him yourself. You young rips are too fast for me. A bit of respect for age, please. That damson puddin's mine. Desist, wretch, or I'll report you to your grandpa, what?
Lord Brocktree's eyes twinkled as he shook Dottie's paw. Two down, one to go, miss. That was a decisive victory, I'd say. I wonder if they've managed to wake Bucko yet. Dottie twitched her ears disapprovingly.
Do you know, sir, I've got a feeling we cheated.
Log-a-log Gren replaced the bung in her wine keg. She held it up and shook it, listening to the swish it made.
Nearly half a keg the blackguard supped. Cheated, you say, young'un? We never cheated at all. Bucko defeated himself by showing off and being so greedy. Ain't that so, Juka? Aye, 'tis true, miss. 'Twas no small thing to vanquish him at his own game, in his own court, and under his own rules. Bucko had defeated all comers, I'll warrant, by fair means or foul, until he met thee. Thou art a worthy champion.
Dottie attempted to rise and fell back, holding her waist.
You mean I'm an overstuffed rack? You know, I think my ears have gone fatter.
Juka heaved Dottie upright, a smile hovering on her normally serious features.
Up ye come. Gran, take her other paw. Methinks a good long walk until nightfall will cure thee, miss. If that proves useless, there is always an old squirrel remedy for one who is overeaten. Eh, Fleet Scott?
The old hare glared at Juka. He had not forgotten.
Take the walk, young'un. Tramp about till your bally paws feel ready to drop off. If you don't, I know what'll happen. That bush-tailed poisoner'll boil up half the woodlands in a pot and sit on you till you drink it. Take my word. Just the smell of that squirrel's foul concoction would make a worm gag and rot the feathers off a blinkin' buzzard.
Brocktree and Ruff watched the hare maid totter off between the squirrel and the shrew. Ruff sat back on his rudder.
Our little Dottie, eh? A future queen of hares. Who'd have thought it?
The badger lord replied confidently.
I would, friend. That's why I chose her. That young'un has courage, nerve, and wit. She'll make a truly perilous queen.
Cha! She still gore a biff bucko tomorrow. I think she bees too little for dat.
Brocktree looked over his shoulder at Skittles, seated on the great sword hilt.
Aye, you've a point there, wretch. Under Bucko's rules, Dottie's two wins count for nothing if he beats her tomorrow. Our plans and her work will have been all for nothing.
Ha! Buck plan harder and work more. Skittles help.
Brocktree tickled the hog babe's footpaw affectionately.
Well said, mate. I wish I'd been as clever as you when I was a badger babe.
Skittles scoffed at the idea.
Cha-ha! No little one's cleverer in Skickles. Not no biggins, neither. Me cleverer in all the world, ho I.
I wouldn't argue with him, mate,
Ruff murmured solemnly to his badger friend.
He's got hold of the sword.
They walked back to the camp under the willows together. Brocktree's mind was seething with a host of thoughts. His father, old Stonepaw, Salamandastron, the mountain that was his spiritual inheritance, the army he needed to raise so he could regain it, and Dottie. All of his plans, hopes, and dreams rested in the paws of a young hare maid. Granted, she did not lack courage or determination, but Bucko was an experienced warrior, a wild March mountain hare with countless victories under his belt. Nor was he particular about the way he accomplished them. Was Skittles right? Would Dottie prove too young, small, and inexperienced to overcome King Bucko Big Bones in this, the most difficult of her three challenges? 25. Unget Trun acquired a new enemy on the night that Grottle made his escape from the underground cavern. Battered, bleeding, and totally exhausted, the fox was swept out into the sea. He floated a while, letting the tide sweep him along, half dead, but half alive. He had craftily hung back in the blue tunnel, letting Frawl run eagerly in front of him, straight into the spider crabs. The stunted fox clung to a piece of driftwood, salt water stinging his eyes as he was swept south on the current. He watched Salamandastron recede and swore to himself that he would return one day. Outwardly, Grottle shivered with the cold. But inside, he was burning with the unquenchable fires of vengeance. The following evening, Ungat Trun presided over the trial of four blue horde rats. These had been brought before him by Karangul, the only other fox serving in the hordes beside Grottle. Karangul held the title of captain-in-chief in all the Wildcats' vast armada. Karangul was a disciplinarian. He lived by his master's rules and laws. Very little aboard the ships escaped his keen notice. He gave his evidence in a strange, clipped voice.
What are these beasts charged with, mightiness? I tell you. They fish, keep fish themselves, eat 'em.
The four horde rats knelt before Ungat Trun, roped together by a thick line about their necks. He watched his spiders a while, then turned to the rats, as if noticing them for the first time.
You know what you must do with any fish you catch.
Karangul kicked the rat closest to him.
You answer.
Give 'em to the captain of the fishing party,
the rat mumbled. The wildcat's voice carried no anger, nor any emotion whatsoever.
So, you know my law. Why did you disobey it and eat the fish?
Without any urging, one of the four stood up, his face a mask of sullen defiance.
"'Cause we hadn't had no victuals for 2 days. We was hungry.
Ungat Trun smiled, and a rat shuddered. He knew what was coming. He had witnessed that smile turned upon other beasts.
"'Do I look fat and well-fed? Does the Frigoral, or your captain? We are all hungry until proper foraging grounds have been found. But we do not steal food from the mouths of our comrades. That is why we are the chosen ones.'
He beckoned the Grand Frigoral with his scepter.
"'Give orders to all my captains to assemble their creatures on the beach at high tide tomorrow. These four will be made an example of. My hordes will witness their execution. Guards, take them away and watch them well. Garangul, stay. I would talk with you.'
When the guards, prisoners, and Frigoral had departed, Ungat Trun questioned his captain-in-chief.
"'What are they saying aboard my ships? Is it mutiny?' "'Mightness? Not yet. I whip 'em, work 'em hard, but no food. They talk, whisper, steal. Need food to live.'
With all the sinewy litheness of a great cat, the conqueror bounded from his throne and swept out of the room.
"'Follow me. I think I have the answer.'
Karangul was fairly quick on his paws. However, he had a job keeping up with his master as they bounded upstairs. A guard captain was waiting at the stairhead. At Trun's nod, he fell in behind them. Sailors pulled Stiffener out of the shaft of evening light which framed him in the window.
"'Hide yourself. Some beast's coming.'
Stiffener stowed himself behind some of the older ones huddled in a corner. He heard the key grate in the lock. Torleif joined Sailors, and they stood together in front of the others as the door swung open. Threatening with his spear point, the guard captain jabbed at them.
"'Back, you lot! Get back and stand still!'
Ungat Trun and the hard-faced fox walked in. Torleif took a pace forward, his voice shaking with indignation.
"'I demand food for these hares. We've had nothing but one pail of water since we were locked in here. Disgraceful, sir!'
The guard captain struck him down with a spear butt.
"'Silence, long ears! Lower orders do not speak in the presence of mighty Ungat Trun. I'll slay the next beast that speaks without permission.'
Sailors and several others knelt down and began ministering to the fallen Torleif. Ungat Trun nodded toward the hares and smiled, raising his eyes at Karangul.
"Yes?"
The fox nodded, satisfied.
"Yes, mightness."
They swept out, the door slammed shut, and the key turned. Torleif sat up, rubbing at his swollen face. Stiffener hurried to his side as he murmured in a half-dazed voice,
"Huh! What do you suppose that was all about, eh?"
Wolby sobbed.
"Oh, did you see how that villain and the fox looked at us? My blood fair ran cold, I can tell you."
Stiffener helped Torleif up onto his footpaws.
"Don't blub, Marm. It ain't helping any beast. I've got a pretty good idea what they were sizing us up for, but we won't be hanging around to find out the truth of it."
Unstowing the rope from where he had hidden it throughout the day, the old boxing hare began giving orders.
"It'll be dark soon, and Brog will be waiting down below with his otters. Sailors, is there any way we can jam that lock so they can't come barging in here?"
"Give me a tick, and I'll think of something, Stiff."
"Right you are, Marm. I'll make the line fast and watch at the window for Brog and the crew. Torleif, if you're feeling better, line them up in order to go. Oldest and shakiest first, fittest last. We can lower the first lot. Second lot can shin down without help."
Sailors had a brainwave about the lock.
"Wobie, give me that necklet you're wearing, please."
The fat old hare clapped a paw to her neck.
"You can't have this. It was left to me by my mum, and Grandma had it before her. 'Twas always in our family, and I won't give it up. Not my necklet. 'Tis far too precious to me."
Sailors slapped Wobie's paw aside and wrenched the necklet off, losing one or two beads in the process.
"Don't be so silly, Marm. This is a matter of life and death, do you hear? And it could mean your life or death. Any beast got a bit of fluffy cloth about them? Here, take the corner of my shawl. Itchy, fluffy old thing. I never liked it, really."
Oh, thank you. I'll need to borrow the pin you fasten it with. Looks good and pointy.
Using the pin, Saliers poked the homely knitted shawl end into the keyhole, popping in a bead here and there. She went at it until the lock was packed tight with fluffy shawl and slippy beads.
There now, try turning a blinking key in that lot, what?
Day's final sun rays melted scarlet and gold into the western horizon. A pale sliver of silver crescent moon was visible in the deep, dark blue sky. Suddenly the great heron, Rulango, filled the window space. Stiffener breathed a sigh of relief.
Good to see you, mate. Is Brog and the crew down there?
One emphatic nod and the heron flew off. The boxing hare spat on his paws and rubbed them.
Right, Miss Woby Marm, step up here. You're the first.
As soon as the rope end encircled her oversized waist, Woby went into a wailing panic attack.
Oh, I'll never make it. I'm not going. I'll slip and fall. I know I will. No, I'm not going. I'll stay here. Oh, me, oh, my. Woo!
Torley bristled at Stiffener.
I say, old chap, can I see you strike that lady? Bad form, sir. Jolly bad form.
Stiffener patted Torleap's chin, none too gently.
Now, don't go off the deep end, old feller. I didn't hurt her. It was just a tap in the right place. It was either that or leave her behind. You wouldn't like one, too, just to help you down and save your nerves, sir?
Torleap assisted Stiffener and Saliers to lower Woby's limp bulk down on the line, waffling away.
See what you mean, sir? Very good. Slides down easy, don't she? What? No bally need for that sort of thing with me, you know. Don't mind heights at all, not one little bit. Paw over paw, what? That's me, old chap. Turn a bally squirrel green with envy. Repellin', up xylin', call it what you will.
A tug on the line told them Brog was ready for the next escaper. Things went smoothly for the next hour or so. Stiffener had got all the oldest ones down and half of the fitter ones when Torleap held up a paw of warning.
Yes! It's those two beasts from down below, Rip Thing and his confounded brother.
Stiffener froze. He could hear the voices.
That's Tornet. They'll see them going by their window.
Torleap listened more carefully.
Hang on. They ain't below. They're at the blinking door.
Rip Fang's voice could be heard clearly from beyond the door.
Oh, very good, Dumai. What a clever brother I got, eh? Steals the key off the guard cap'n, and now he can't even open the flaming door with it. Come here. Let me try.
There followed a deal of poking, scratching, and some very colorful language. Dumai could be heard giggling.
You're good at this, ain't you? Now you've got three beads and some damp, fluffy old blanket. Any more in there, Rip?
Look, shut your stupid gob and gar on lookout, will ya? The guard cap'n might come back at any time now. You're the one who started this, you woggle-headed white snout.
Who, me? I never said a scringin' word.
Oh, didn't you? Let's go and have a look at those long ears, he says. Me and you'll pick out a nice fatten, he says. One of Karangul's captains told me they're going to the cooking pots tomorrow. That's what you said, blitterhead.
Let me have another go. I'll turn the key.
Stiffener signaled the next candidate for the line.
Come on, mate, move. Next one right behind. We can't afford to hang about any more. Shift your paws there. Bang. Thud.
Ahoy in there. Get this rubbish out the lock hole, or it'll be worse for use when we open this door.
The banging of a spear butt against the heavy door timbers continued. Stiffener watched another hare disappear over the sill into the night, clinging tight to the rope. When he judged the hare was far enough down, he quietly called for the next one. A loud groan of frustration sounded from outside.
Now look at what you've done, idiot! You gone and broke the key off in the lock, you senseless rat!
Well, how was I to know it'd snap rusty old key? Never mind, Rip. We can batter the door down, eh?
There were only three hares left in the cell now. Stiffener guided the next one onto the rope. An argument between the two sea rats was in full flow.
Batter the door down? Have you got mud for brains? What happens when the door falls off its hinges, eh? I'll tell you what. There'll be two of us with a spear apiece facing 60 beasts, you slime-brained toad.
There followed a scuffling sound and the clacking of spear staves as the pair turned on one another. Stiffener winked at Torleap.
We did it, mate. Come on, out you go.
What? Oh, after you, old chap.
Get a grip of that rope, Torleap. No time now for bowing and scraping. Out.
The boxing hare watched the taut rope anxiously, waiting for Torleap to get far enough down it to let him take his leave of the hated prison cell. In the passage outside, the altercation between the two sea rats continued.
Ow! Ow! You bit me tail, savage!
Well, you shouldn't have called me a slime-brained toad. Fancy calling your own brother a name like that. Look what you done to me skull! Split it! See? That's blood, that is!
Stiffener vaulted onto the sill, took a firm grip of the taut line, and began his descent, with the quarrel still going on.
Split your skull? That's only a scratch. There ain't no blood at all, just a little bump. Dumai, come back! Where are you off to?
Dumai scuttled off down the passage. He turned at the stairhead and stuck his tongue out.
Snagglefang!
Stung by the reference to his single tooth, Rip Fang brandished his spear and chased after his brother.
Right, that's done it. There was no call for that. I'll crack your skull good and proper when I get you.
Willing paws guided Stiffener to the ground, then Bragalaw was hugging him fiercely.
Good to see your old face again, mate.
The boxing hare looked about at his friends.
Thanks for your help, Brog. I kept my promise to Lord Stonepaw. There ain't a hair left on Salamandastron.
Oh, 'tis so sad. Our home is naught but a vermin den now.
Wobi wept into her apron. Stiffener put a paw about her shaking shoulders.
There, there, don't take on so, Marm. We'll be back, I promise you. Sorry I had to knock you out like that. Hope it didn't hurt too much, Marm.
The old hare wife dried her eyes and sniffed.
You did the right thing, sir. I was being very silly, carrying on like that. If I'd had enough sense, I'd have hit me for such shocking behavior. Oh, isn't it good that nice Mr. Bragalaw and his otters helped us like this?
The sea otter skipper bowed gallantly.
Thank ye, Marm. But mayhap we could carry on this discussion elsewheres. It don't do to linger around here. Derby, take our friends to the cave. Rulango, go with them to see none get lost. Me and the rest of the crew will follow, wiping out our trail. See you back at the Holt, Stiff.
With Derby leading, Stiffener in the rear, and the heron hovering overhead, the escaped prisoners scurried off toward the cliff tops. Bragalaw and his crew began cutting bushy branches from the shrubbery growing out the rocks to erase the trail.
Don't leave a paw print showing anywheres, mates, or those blue bottoms of Truns will be paying our Holt a visit.
One of the crew stirred the captured sentries with his paw. Bound and gagged lightly, they rolled their eyes fearfully.
What do we do with these two beauties, Brog?
Bragalaw gnawed his lip thoughtfully.
I know they're only vermin. But I ain't never slayed an helpless beast afore, and I'm not starting now. Leave 'em tied up here. The moment we're gone, they'll start breaking themselves loose. They can be Trun's problem. Leastways, that scum'll know he's not having things all his own way when they makes their report. Right, let's make a move, mate.
The horde beasts wriggled furiously with their bonds once Brog's party had departed. But a sea otter knows his ropes. It would be some time before the prisoners could hope to be even slightly loose. 26. Brog and his crew arrived back at the cave in broad daylight. It was a fine summer morn, with light breezes coming in from the sea. Stiffener and the hares had only just got there ahead of Brog's party. The track along the cliffs, after climbing down from a mountaintop, had worn the older ones out, and Derby had been forced to make a few rest stops along the way. Greetings and introductions were still being made as Brog entered the cave. He joined Stiffener and put a paw to his brow in mock despair.
Season's a salt sea, Stiff mate. Couldn't you have left that old Wobi creature behind? We got three of 'em blubbin' now.
Bragalaw's mother, Frutch, and Blench the cook were being helped by Wobi to stir the chowder pot, All three were sobbing and sniffling gratefully for the hare's deliverance. Brog nodded to the two musical young otters, who broke out their small drum and whistle and struck up a song.
"Now have ye been away far to tarry and to roam? Well, sit ye by the fireside, welcome to your home. The kettle's on to boil, flames a-burning bright. No more you'll sleep alone neath those stars at night. Take off your travelin' cloak, come put your paws up here. Put a smile in me old eye, take away this weary tear. You've come home, mate. And in time for supper, too, so it feels just great to say welcome home to you."
Crutch brightened up immediately. She kissed her son's cheek.
"Oh, Brog, you got him to sing our song. Remember I used to bounce you on me tail and sing it to you when you was just a little fat otter kit? Such a chubby, smiling babe you were."
The sea otter skipper's tail curled with embarrassment.
"Mom, you have to go on like that in front of every beast?"
Stiffener patted his friend's well-muscled back.
"I wouldn't complain if my mom was around to say things like that, mate. Let's see if we can learn about what's going on among the vermin inside Salamandastron from Sailears and Torley. Might help us to make a few plans. What do you say, you little fat otter kit?"
The boxing hare dodged a swipe of Brog's rudder-like tail and led him over to where the two hares sat. Later that night, the fires burned low. Nearly 40 hares had been found places to sleep, and Blench was helping Frutch and Wobie to bake bread for breakfast. Stiffener and Brogalaw listened long and carefully to the two hares' account of all they had heard and seen while in captivity. Then, allowing the pair to get some rest, they sat together making plans.
"So, that's the lie of the land, Brog. What do you think?"
The sea otter added some old pine cones to the fire.
"One thing's clear, Stiff. The Blue Bottoms are low on victuals. Feeding an army that size takes some doing, mate. Trun will have to send foraging parties into the land hereabouts. You catch my drift?"
Stiffener smiled grimly. A good scheme was forming.
"Aye, I'm with you, Brog. We don't have the numbers to go up against Trun and invade the mountain, but we can certainly try to cut off the villain's food supplies, eh?"
"Right you are, miss mate, and this is how we'll do it. I'll post Rulango to keep a lookout from the air. He can fly well out of arrow range. Whenever he sees a foraging party set out, he'll report to us which direction they're a-going."
Stiffener warmed to the idea eagerly.
"Our crews can harass them, cut them off, steal their supplies, duck and weave, hit them when they're least expecting it."
Brog chuckled as he poked a stray pine cone back into the fire.
"They say an army marches and fights on its stomach. Ha! Let's see what those vermin can do on empty stomachs. Even if they tries to go seaward and fish, we can hammer 'em. My crew was born in salt water. They knows more about the sea than any vermin from the land."
Stiffener Medic and Skipper Brogalaw clasped paws.
"We'll teach 'em the art of war, mate."
"Aye, and 'twill be the hardest lesson they ever learned."
Mid-morning sunlight shafted into the passage from the cell window when the door was smashed down. Ungat Trun stared blankly at the prison cell. After a moment, he strode inside and leaned on the sill. Fregoral, the guard captain, and a patrol of horde beasts stood apprehensively in the passage, waiting for the wildcat's wrath to descend on them. Trun removed his helmet, closed both eyes, and massaged his temples slowly. When he finally spoke, his voice was a barely controlled growl with a high-pitched hiss behind it.
"I don't want to know who stole the key, nor who snapped it off in the lock. I don't want to hear excuses or explanations from any of you. I don't want to know how the hares escaped or where they've gone. But before the sun sets today, I want to see 40 long ears back here. Take your patrols. Scour the countryside, send vessels to search the waters and coast north and south of here. But before you go, come down to the shore and watch what happens to 4 creatures who ate a few fish without asking. Then, all of you, ask yourselves this question. If the mighty Ungat Trun could have 4 beasts executed for a couple of mouthfuls of fish,
What fate would he devise for the entire guard patrol of this level who managed to let 60 valuable prisoners escape? Think!
Captain-in-Chief Karangul came marching up as the Wildcat emerged from the mountain.
Mightness!
Ungatrun eyed him warily.
What is it, Captain?
Two soldiers! They find sentries who desert at dawn!
A sigh of relief almost escaped the Wildcat, but he checked it.
Ah, the pair who deserted the night before last. Where were they found? Who were the soldiers who found them?
They walk here, into main gate. Two soldiers, on sentry, round mountain, were there.
The Wildcat spoke his mind aloud.
So, the two sentries, who were supposed to be patrolling round the mountain all night, spent their time idling in the shelter of the main gate, by the guard fire, no doubt. They were wakened by the two other fools walking in, so they arrested them. Is that it?
Yeah, Mightness.
Where are the two deserters now?
Sentries know Mightness rules about runaway beasts. They slay him for break of your law.
The Wildcat made a paw mark in the sand and stared at it.
Why am I surrounded by half-wits and dunderheads? He hissed.
Mightness?
Nothing, Captain. Have the two sentries tied up with the four to be executed. Make certain Fragor tells every beast why they must pay the penalty. Sleeping on guard and shirking their patrol duties, and so on and so on. I've got other things to think about. Captain, before you sailed for me, what did you do?
Karangul indicated a faded tattoo on his paw and the hole in his ear where a big brass ring once hung.
Mightness, I was corsair long ago.
The assembled hordes on the beach stood watching their leader conversing earnestly with his captain-in-chief.
Tell me, did you ever come across a badger?
One time.
A male badger, in his prime, carrying a double-hilted war blade over his shoulder?
Nah, Mightness. Old female badger, I see. Dead.
Trun suddenly lost interest in the conversation and stalked down to the execution site. Horde beasts heard him muttering to himself as he passed them.
I cannot see your face, but I see you every night. Yet no beast has even heard of you. But we will meet. Ah, yes, Badger, we will meet. And then you'll see what a wildcat looks like before you die.
Noon sun had passed its zenith when Rulango alighted on a dune close to the cave. Bragalaw was waiting for him. He cleared a patch in the sand to let the heron sketch out his report of what he had seen. Bragalaw stared tight-lipped as the drawing unfolded before him. Stiffener came out of the cave with Frutch, munching on a slice of flat pastry with obvious enjoyment. Frutch carried two more pieces on a platter. Stiffener popped in the final bit, licking crumbs off his paw.
Beech and hazelnut slice, eh, Marm? Your own recipe, too. No wonder Brog looks well, feeding off vittles like yours.
Frutch twitched her rudder at the compliment.
Our bird likes it too, you know. 'Tis a mix of sliced nuts and plum preserve baked atop a shortbread biscuit.
Nearing her son and the heron, Frutch called,
I brought your favorite slice, fresh from the oven.
Rulango stood on one leg and looked distant, while Brog hastily obliterated the picture from the sand with his footpaw.
Good old Mum. Brought the raspberry cordial, too, did ye?
Land sakes! I'll fetch the oven out and the table and chairs, if and you like, Bragalaw. Talk about chasing after an ungrateful son. Here, you great lump, get this down ye.
Bragalaw and Rulango set about their slices eagerly. Frutch stroked the big bird's neck affectionately.
Bless his feathers! There's a bird who never complains and knows what's good for him. What's he been drawing, Brog?
The sea otter appeared suddenly absent-minded.
Oh, 'twas nothing for you to worry your pretty old head about. Ahoy, Mom, we're thirsty. Where's that cordial, eh?
She trundled off down the dune.
I'll go and fetch it.
Stiffener tapped a paw in the sand.
So then, matey, just what was your bird sketching?
Brog dropped his voice a tone.
Do you know what that wicked beast did to six of his own? Had 'em bound together with rocks and drowned in the sea. Aye, 'tis true. All the blue bottoms, whole hordes of them, was made to stand and watch the poor wretches screaming and pleading for their lives. Stiff, what makes any beast follow a master like that?
Stiffener doodled sand patterns with his paw.
Who knows, Brog? Fear? Wanting to be on the side of a conqueror who always wins? Maybe the vermin join his ranks 'cause deep down they're as bad and evil as Trun himself.
The sea otter skipper shuddered and shook himself.
Time we started striking back now, Stiff. Let's take a look at this otter and hare crew of ours, see what weapons they're best suited to besides knives and forks.
27. It was noon of the third day at the court of King Bucko Big Bones, time for the fighting challenge. Spectators were packed tight around the arena. Others sat on the hillside or climbed trees. However, there was no air of festive gaiety. This was serious business. The outcome would decide which hare picked up the crown. The high, bright sun presided over a silent and solemn crowd. A furtive whisper rustled about Bucko and his seconds as they made their way to the ring through the path which fell open before them. The mountain hare had discarded his broad belt for the event, and a paunch, which had not been visible before, was now clearly evident. Creatures commented on it in hushed tones.
I say, whatever happened to the trim waist he had, what? Too much scoff and not enough exercise, if you ask me. Maybe so, but old Bucko still looks dangerous enough to do the job. I wouldn't fancy facing him, no, sir.
Ach, aye, yon king's a big braw beastie, near twice the size of the wee lassie. I'm thinking 'twill all be o'er if he lands the bairn one good blow.
Bucko took the log barrier at a bound, his cloak swirling as he tossed it to his seconds. He jammed his scepter between two of the logs, balancing the laurel-wreathed gold coronet on it. Then, grim-faced, he sat down to wait, acknowledging the presence of the bank bowl referee with a curt nod. Glancing up at the sun, Bucko judged which would be the best position to take up without being dazzled. After a while, some of the onlookers began whispering among themselves. Dottie had not yet put in an appearance. Bucko sat calm and motionless. Lord Brocktree and his party led Dottie through the aisle of creatures which opened from the stream side. He and Ruff stepped into the arena, followed by Dottie and Girth. The hair maid was simply clad in a short green tunic. She sat down on the logs on the opposite side to Bucko, giving him scarce a glance. Waddling to the center of the ring, the bank bull began his preamble.
Good creatures, attend me! Today is the day of the fighting challenge, and the rules are as follows. No weapons or arms can be
Bucko stood up and cut him short.
Ach, away and stop wearing your old gobboot. We ken the rules as good as any beast here. Let's get on with it.
A roar of approval arose as the pompous bank bull fled the ring. Ruff winked at the hair maid as he and the others stepped outside the logs bordering the arena.
Go to it, missy. Remember what you've got to do.
Dottie leapt up and dashed to the line scored in the earth. She scraped her footpaw along it, calling to her opponent,
Come on, Bucko. Let's have you up to scratch. Come and face me across this line. I'm waiting.
The mountain hare swaggered slowly across, but he did not put his footpaw on the mark. It was obvious he expected some sort of trick. He winked knowingly at Dottie.
You're a canny wee beastie, but I'm no fool by ye. You and your friends have cooked something up, I can tell. So you're no getting my footpaw on yon mark. Ye ken what the rules say, pretty one?
I'll tell ye.
Them rules say the king, that's myself, has the right to decide whether this contest be for a scratch or moving freely.
He smiled at the disappointment which clouded her face.
So, my bonny wee thing, 'tis goin' to be movin' freely. That's my decision.
Ach, did I look so sad about it?
Dottie twitched both ears impertinently.
Oh, I don't know, sir. You may be the one who ends up looking sad, what?
Bucko did actually look sad for a moment, as he pondered his big clenched left paw.
Ye've brought this on yourself, missy. I'll be fair grieved to lay ye oot flat. I've no raised my paw to a lassie afore. I promise not to hit ye too hard.
Dottie moved a little closer to him.
Thank ye, sir, and I promise not to let you hit me at all. Now, do we stand here jaw wagging all afternoon, or shall we get on with it? What do you say, eh?
Dottie was ready. She saw the hard, knobbly paw move in a quick arc. Falling flat, she kicked Bucko's footpaws from under him, leapt upright, and fled. The crowd roared aloud at her clever move.
Ha, ha, did you see that? She sat him down good and hard.
Aye, and without even landing a proper blow. Ho, ho, ho.
Bucko scrambled upright, flicking dust from his scut, and went after the hair maid like a charging bull. Dottie skidded to a halt as he rushed by her. This time she stood her ground when he turned and charged once more, waiting until he was almost on top of her. Again she went down, falling flat on her back, both hind legs shooting up like pistons. Bucko's own weight and momentum carried him straight into her. Air whooshed from his stomach as it came in contact with Dottie's footpaws, and he went ears over scut, landing hard on his back in a cloud of dust. Dottie was up and running again. Bucko arose, but not so speedily this time, one paw clutching his stomach. He did not give chase, but circled swiftly and cut off Dottie's escape as he backed her against the logs. This time it was his turn to throw himself down, his long, powerful footpaws lashing out at her.
Thunk!
King Bucko gasped aloud with pain. Dottie had jumped backward onto the log boundary, and the noise was audible as her opponent's footpaws hit the wood. She cleared his head at a bound and trotted to the center of the ring. Bucko took a moment to pull a splinter from his footpaw, then he got upright purposefully and limped out to meet her. They faced each other, Dottie breathing hard, but Bucko breathing harder. His eyes were red with wrath.
"Stand and fight me, ye wee whelp!"
He lashed out with a surprisingly quick left paw. Dottie dropped into a crouch, hearing it whistle overhead. She stayed stooped, putting into practice what the twins had taught her. One, two, three. Dottie whacked at the stomach protruding in front of her. Bucko's flailing right thudded against the side of her head. Stars exploded in her eyes, and the crowd noise suddenly seemed very distant. Bucko's left looped around her head and tightened on her neck.
Ach, you've got her new, Majesty!
Roaring darkness filled Dottie's brain as the breath was cut off in her throat by Bucko's grip. Dimly, she could hear the Hare twins bellowing in unison,
"The old bread basket, miss! Give it him in the bread basket!"
She knew what they meant. Swinging her right furiously, she pummeled the king's stomach, and as he gasped, she slid out of his stranglehold. She found herself facing his back and shoved hard, knocking Bucko face down. He struggled up, spitting earth and wiping dust from both eyes. Lowering his head for a vicious butt, he hurtled forward. Dazed as she was, Dottie knew she had to act quickly. Holding position, the hare maid sucked in her stomach and arched her back. The mountain hare's bowed head struck her fractionally, jarring her hip. Clenching both paws, she brought them down in a sharp double blow on the back of Bucko's neck.
Once. Twice.
Still bent double, Bucko carried on another three paces, staggering crazily. Then he crumpled and fell. A deathly hush fell upon the crowd. Dottie walked across and stood over the fallen king. A voice from the crowd split the silence.
Finish him off!
Dottie turned and glared in the direction of the shout.
Why don't you try it yourself? Come on! This hare is a brave fighter. He could still finish you off from where he lies, whoever you are.
Bending wearily, she tried to lift Bucko, but she collapsed with fatigue alongside him. The mountain hare opened one eye and gave her a battered smile.
My thanks to you for that, lassie. 'Twas weel said.
Lord Brocktree and Ruff supported Bucko back to the log ring. Dottie followed, limping as she leaned heavily on Gren and Juka. They sat sharing a pail of water from a ladle, the victor and the vanquished. Brocktree and Ruff positioned themselves behind the pair, stopping the numerous paws trying to pat their backs.
Well done! What a super-duper scrap, what?
Ach, 'twas one to tell your bairns about in seasons to come.
Bravely fought! Never seen anything like it in me bally life. What courage!
Stand back there, every beast! Give these two animals room to breathe. Stand back, I say.
The bank bull referee pushed his way through, bearing the crown and scepter. Bucko placed a paw about Dottie's shoulder.
I'd take it if I were ye, Dorothea. You beat me fair and square, lassie. I couldn't think any beast more deserving of my title than ye.
Ach, you're a fatal beauty, so ye are.
And you, sir, are a valiant and brave warrior.
She passed the crown and scepter to Lord Brocktree.
Here you are, sir, crown and thingamy. Don't rightly know what I'm supposed to do with the confounded things.
Bucko was taken aback.
Ach, you mean you don't want my crown and scepter?
Dottie shook her head.
No, not really. The plan wasn't for me to become queen or kingess or anything like that. No, we had a bigger idea, and one which we think will appeal to a great perilous warrior like yourself, sir. Don't you realize you've practically got a blinkin' great army here at your court, Buck?
The former king shrugged ruefully.
Aye, 'twas my intention that one day I'd knock 'em into shape as an army. Then I could have found my enemy and marched against him with these braw beasts at my back.
Brocktree patted Bucko's shoulder.
Well, your time has come, sir. You can help us rally this crew into a great fighting force to follow us to Salamandastron and face Ungat Trun.
Ungat Trun, the wildcat?
Hold on there, Brock. Yon's the very foe I'm bound to find and slay.
Dottie gaped in surprise at the mountain hare.
You're joking, of course, sir.
Ach, 'tis nay joke, lassie. Feel my back.
The hare maid ran her paw across the welted ridges of flesh beneath the fur of Bucko's back.
He did this?
For the first time since she had known the tough hare, Dottie saw a single tear course down his cheek.
Flogged me with the flat of my own sword till it brake it o'er my back, and drove my hares from her hame in the North Mountains. That's the beastie they call Ungat Trun for ye. Aye, the whippin' was carried oot by a fox called Karangul on Trun's orders. Karangul, ach, there's a vermin wouldn't sleep easy if he knew Bucko Big Bones was still alive and drawin' breath. The rogue thought he'd left me for dead, you ken.
Dottie felt a wave of pity sweep over her. She squeezed the mountain hare's big, scarred paw.
Let's go somewhere more private and discuss this. Would you care to take a bite of supper with us, neath the jolly old willows? Cheer you up, sir, what?
Bucko swiftly regained his composure and jauntiness.
Ach, I'm fair famished fra all that fightin'. Lead on, Brock, my friend. Old Bucko can vittle with the best of 'em.
Ha ha! I'll wager he can, too.
Ruff murmured to the badger as they set off for the bank.
Never knew a hare who couldn't. We'll let old Fleet Scut defend Dottie's feastin' title for her.
I say, top hole, what? That's jolly decent of you, sir.
Ruff tweaked the old hare's ear.
You wasn't supposed to hear that, famine chops.
It turned out to be anything but a private supper on the stream bank. Colored lanterns and torches decked the trees in the soft summer night. A celebration feast for Dottie's victory had been secretly prepared by the Gwasom. Girth and some moles he had met, and Bucko's cooks, who were determined to give their old master a good send-off and welcome the new mistress. Dottie was so pleased that she rummaged through her worn bag and whipped out the hair accordion.
I couldn't sleep last night, so I composed a ditty in the hope that I'd win the challenge today. Good job I did, what? Right, my good subjects, gather round and I'll sing it to you. I know you'll jolly well like it.
Brocktree clapped a paw to his brow.
I'm sure we will.
The terrible twins, Southpaw and Bobweave, rubbed their paws in anticipation.
I say, we didn't know you could warble, miss.
Spiffin, what? I'll bet you rather good at it.
Brocktree viewed the eager pair with a jaundiced eye.
I guarantee 'tis something you won't forget lightly.
Dottie forestalled any further chatter by launching into her ditty with a wobbly falsetto.
Ho, oh, whack, folly, doodle, o, duck, fontaine, Dilworthy is my family name. A fatal beauty have I, good beasts, I'm completely unrehearsed. Having never been kingess or queen, woe to me, I'm doubly cursed. Oh, the crown lies heavy on the ears of a simple maid like me. Now every beast must scrape and bow and bend a jolly old knee. Hee-hee-hee-hee! Ho, whack, folly, doodle, o, duck, fontaine, Dilworthy is my family name. What a royally difficult life I've got, but I regally say to myself, what? A duck fontaine must show no pain. 'Tis fame and fortune's lot. My super subjects will adore my spiffin' sweet young voice, and loyally cry out, more, more, more. Each night they'll all rejoice. Joy, hoy, 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 hoice. Ho, whack, folly, doodle, o, duck fontaine, Dilworthy is my family name. Affairs of state that just can't wait, and decisions of high degree, the balance of a puddin's fate, rests hard twixt lunch and tea. Let any beast yell, come, let's feast, whilst the royal beauty doth sleep, they'll rue the day that they met me, Dorothea, da Huck, Fontaine, Dilworthy.
As Dottie's ears quivered on the last off-key note, the hair accordion groaned as it discharged a deafened gnat. A mole hurled himself into the stream to escape the discord. The stream bank was empty, every beast having fled during the second painstaking verse. Only Southpaw and Bobweave sat adoringly in front of her, applauding wildly.
Bravo, miss! Put a blinkin' nightingale to shame, what?
Rather! Are you going to give another rendition, Dottie? Sing us another of your charming ditties, what?
Dottie looked slightly baffled. It was the first time any beast had actually sat through her singing and requested more.
Jolly decent of you chaps, but the old vocal cords need feedin'. I'm rather peckish right now. You could do me a favor, though, and see if you can clean out my hair accordion. Confounded things full of gnats and such. Must still be some old pale cider in there attracting the blighters.
She tossed the hair accordion to the twins and wandered off to see if she could find some food. Southpaw and Bobweave set about boxing each other for the privilege of cleaning out their idol's instrument.
Give it here, Southie. She was looking at me when she chucked the thing over. Rats to you, old chap, but I'll give you a swift right. Oof! Here, have some of this, chum. Now, will you let me clean it? Ouch! That does it. Get those paws up.
Away from the main merriment, three shrew boats, lashed together, floated gently on the stream. Sipping shrew beer and dining on pasties, salad, and cheese, Brocktree, Fleetscut, and Bucko sat with the tribal chiefs, Ruff, Gren, Drucko, and Juka, to confer on important matters. The former king had formed an alliance with the others.
I dinna know where this Salem whatchamacallit place is, but I'm gan with ye, and my wild mountain hares'll be a-comin' tay, the new. We wouldna miss a braw battle for naught.
Gurth sat with Dottie, the willow leaves lightly brushing their heads. Between them lay a flagon of gooseberry crush and a thick vegetable flan. The sturdy mole waved his tankard toward the logboats.
"'They'm havin' girdly important talks, miss. "'I wouldn't be apprised if and we be on e march by mornin', rye.'
The hair maid broke off a piece of flan. Forgetting her table manners, She spoke through a mouthful in mole talk.
Hoi wugent noiters,
Joyous sounds of happy creatures rang through the warm, velvety night. Music, singing, and feasting were everywhere. Those who were weary slept curled on the grass, full and contented, not worrying about the perilous days which lay ahead of them. Dawn's first birds trilled to the rising sun, waking the dew-scattered sleepers in the wide forest glade. Dottie was already up, abandoning her fatal beauty sleep in favor of the momentous events she knew were about to take place. The hair maid joined Brocktree and the company of chieftains standing on a rock protruding from the hillside. In groups, last night's revelers drifted into the clearing below. Brocktree leaned on his battle blade, Skittles perched on his footpaw. He waited patiently until every beast was standing grouped before him. Then, at his nod, Bucko took the fore.
"Hearken to me, my beasties. There's an old hare here who comes frae a mountain and bears a message for all warriors. I've nae doubt you'll listen to what he has to say. Judge for yourselves. I'm nae langer your king."
Bucko stood back, allowing Fleetscott to come forward. The old hare held the crown in his paw.
"Mount Salamandastron is where I come from, as most of you know what. Now there's those here today who were born there, whose parents and grandkin are comrades of mine. I've been gone from there a while now, but I know for certain that any hares left alive on the mountain will be slaves and prisoners of the wildcat Ungat Trun and his blue hordes."
He waited until the angry shouts died down.
"Ha! I see that you know the vermin, what? When Bucko was king, he intended to form you into an army to hunt Trun down and face him. Well, that still goes. Only difference is you won't be marching under a king. Our leader is the rightful heir of Salamandastron, Brocktree."
There followed a mixture of cheering and surprised cries. Fleetscott held up the crown.
"You hares, let me tell you the law. Some among you will remember the rhyme you learned from your elders. We follow our comrades in peace and war. The hare is a perilous beast, we know. But who commands, who makes our law? The badger lords. 'Twas always so. Do you hear that? This is Lord Brocktree of Brockhall, a badger lord of Salamandastron by birth and by right. And this crown, won for his cause by his brave champion, Dorothea Duckfontaine Dilworthy, is the symbol of his leadership."
Fleetscott passed the crown to Brocktree. Every eye was upon the great badger as he took his place in the vanguard of the tribal chieftains. Unwinding the laurel leaves from the thin gold coronet, he cast them aside. His powerful paws crushed the circlet into a narrow double strip. This he wound about his sword hilt with no more effort than he would have used on a green willow withe. Then the badger lord's voice boomed like thunder about the glade, setting every creature's neck hairs on end.
"Friends, warriors, good beasts all, I am going to defeat the evil one, Ungat Trun. I am going to take back from him and his hordes the mountain that is mine. Today, now, I march for Salamandastron. Those who would follow me, call out this war cry. Eulalia!"
The entire glade exploded in an ear-splitting roar.
"Eulalia!"
Dottie knew then the force and power of a badger lord. She was swept along beside him, howling like a mad beast, surrounded by blades, slings, spears, bows, shields, javelins, and bared teeth, all surging irresistibly forward like a gigantic wave. Brocktree's paws pounded the dust high as he ran, whirring his battle blade like a sunlit lightning flash, his huge form standing out like a beacon.
"Eulalia! Eulalia! Eulalia!"
For all his seasons, Fleet Scott kept pace alongside the hair maid. She saw him, tears flowing down his weathered face, brandishing a short-hafted squirrel spear, yelling hoarsely between the battle cries.
"I never let you down, Lord Stonepaw! I'm coming back home now, sire! Eulalia!"
Book 3. Comes a Badger Lord, also entitled A Shawl for Aunt Blanche. 28. South of Salamandastron, in a sparsely wooded copse, a group of about 30 blue horde beasts and their stoat captain Bile sat in a clearing. They had been foraging for food quite successfully, if any beast were to judge by the bulging haversacks scattered about. Bile was a newly promoted officer, determined to do well. He was very happy with the results of the forage, but also quite hungry. So were the vermin under his command. Bile strode about, checking that the haversacks were all fastened tight, aware of the surly glances of his minions. They wanted to eat some of the food, instead of having to tramp back to the mountain and deposit it untouched with Ungat Trun's supply officers. It was a tricky situation for Bile, but he put on a jovial air and attempted to flatter the mutinous-looking vermin by praising their efforts.
"Ho, ho! We did well today, Cullies. I wouldn't be at all surprised if you wasn't all promoted for your good work."
A rat spat, narrowly missing Bile's footpaw.
"Promotion? What good's that, eh? You can't eat promotion."
The new captain laughed nervously and winked at another rat.
"Ha ha! You was up that tree like a squirrel after those apples. Where did you learn to climb like that, mate?"
Instead of answering, the rat began undoing the drawstring on his heavily laden haversack. Bile knew it was time to assert his authority. He spoke sharply.
"Now, now, none of that, you. Leave them apples alone or I'll have to report you."
The rat pulled out an apple, making a wry face at his companions as he mocked Bile.
"Did you hear the nice new cap'n, mates? Going to report me, he is. Huh. That's if he makes it back alive."
The apple was halfway to the horde rat's mouth when a slingstone struck his paw. He screamed and dropped the apple.
"First beast to move is a dead'un."
A figure clad in a hooded, brown, bark-cloth cloak appeared from behind a juneberry bush, its face hidden behind a woven reed mask, a long whip held in its paw. Bile gasped,
"The Bark Crew!"
The creature behind the mask chuckled harshly. He cracked the whip in Bile's face.
"Ha ha! Right first time, vermin! You're surrounded by 70 of us! Duck your heads! Quick!"
Instinctively, the forage patrol ducked their heads. Broken twigs and leaves showered down on them as a volley of slingstones rattled through the trees overhead. 4 arrows quivered in the ground close to Bile. The whip snaked out, wrapping itself around his paw.
"See what I mean, stoat? Do you and this worthless pack want to live? Answer me!"
Since the start of summer, the dreaded Bark Crew had become the terror of Ungat Trun's foraging patrols. They seemed to be everywhere at once. Bile knew of horde beasts and captains who had been slain when they offered resistance to the brown-cloaked raiders. His voice quavered helplessly as he replied to the sinister figure.
"Don't slay us, sire. We wants to live. What do you want us to do?"
Other members of the Bark Crew entered the vermin camp, bows, swords, and javelins much in evidence. The crew leader pulled Bile forward on the whip around his paw.
"Get rid of your weapons, all of them. Those uniforms, too. Strip 'em off and shed 'em. Move yourselves."
Menaced by the Bark Crew, the vermin piled their arms in a heap and pulled off their uniforms. They huddled together, awaiting the next command.
"Sling those haversacks of victuals on spear poles."
They threaded the laden haversacks 3 to a spear haft. When this was done, they were ordered to lie face down on the ground. Walking between the prostrate figures, the Bark Crew leader consulted his companions aloud.
"What do you say we do with this scum, eh, mates?"
The crew were in no doubt as to the fate of their captives.
Rope him up to some rocks and drown him. Nah, sounds too trunnish to me. Toss him off the cliffs. I vote we tie these vermin to trees and use them for target practice. I like shooting at blue targets.
The crew leader had to crack his whip several times to stop the forage patrol from weeping, sobbing, and begging to be spared. He turned Bile over roughly with his footpaw.
Stow your scringin' and bellerin', stoat. You ain't worth wasting arrows on, so I'm going to let you live.
Lined up in threes, within minutes the foraging patrol stood facing a rift in the cliff tops, in view of the sea. Taking Bile none too gently by his neck scruff, the bark crew leader made him repeat his orders.
We marches straight to the sea, sire. If and we looks left, right, or back, we're dead beasts. We wades into the sea up to our necks and goes that way back to the mountain. I'm to make my report to Ungat Trun that this was the work of the bark crew, and to say that he's a worthless piece of crab bait, and that he's going to starve to death with his vermin army.
The whip cracked viciously over the forage patrol's heads.
Next time we see your faces, we'll roast ye alive. Quick march! One, two! One, two!
The vermin needed little urging to march quicker than they had ever done before. Down the rift, across the shore, and straight into the sea, without a backward glance. Rogalaw removed the woven reed mask from his face and clasped paws with Stiffener.
Another win for the bark crew, matey. Did you notice how thin some of the vermin are starting to look?
Stiffener watched the dark dots far off in the sea, each one representing a horde beast wading neck-deep back to Salamandastron.
They'll look a lot thinner afore we're done with them, Brog. Did you say we had 60 of us surrounding them?
Rogalaw looked around. Their party numbered 22, counting himself and Stiffener.
I thought 60 was enough to do the job, mate. I was going to say we had 50, but that would have really been fibbing.
We could jolly well do with 50 to carry all the loot we liberated from those rascals today,
Willip complained as they turned back to the cops.
Ah, well, at least we've got plenty of grub and weapons. What do you think, Stiff? Should we blindfold the next lot and make them tote the spoils back to our hideout? Save a lot of bloomin' wear and tear on our old carcasses, what?
Brog picked up one end of the spear haft, slung with haversacks.
Come on, Willip, me old mate. Get the other end of this thing on your poor old shoulder, or we'll miss supper.
Huh! You know, I suddenly feel young again, Brog.
Aye. I've noticed every time I mention food, you old lollop-eared grub-walloper. I thought sea otters could scoff until I watched hares sit down to victuals.
A bright summer evening was drawing to its close. Ungat Trun stood on the beach with his Grand Fregoral and Captain Karangul, watching as Bile and his foraging patrol stumbled through the shallows onto the sands. They presented a very odd picture. Seawater had washed out the blue dye from their fur from tail to neck. Only their faces and heads remained blue. Bile staggered up and saluted the wildcat, his body drooping with exhaustion.
Mighty one, we were ambushed.
Ungat's upraised paw silenced him.
Let me guess, Captain Bile. It was the bark crew again. How many of them were there this time? 50? 10?
50 at least, mightiness. The bark crew chieftain gave me a message to deliver, sire.
The wildcat's tail whipped from side to side angrily.
Don't tell me if it's merely insults. Get your patrol out of sight before others see what a pack of clowns you look.
Bile bowed and saluted dutifully, then signaled his patrol to get inside the mountain. Later, Ungat Trun sat closeted in his chamber with Fregoral and Karangul. He watched his spiders, while his two aides watched him, holding their silence and blinking in the thick smoke that swathed the room. The wildcat pointed upward.
Young spiders never seem to get the flies. It's always the older ones. I suppose because they're more experienced, better hunters, wickeder, more ruthless, would you say?
Karangul nodded.
Yeah, it's so, mightness.
Trun turned his gaze upon the fox. You're a ruthless creature, but I need you here. My mistake was in sending out well-behaved new captains. What we need is wicked ones, cruel, evil creatures who bend the rules to suit themselves. Sea rats and corsairs were always like that, eh, Karangul? The fox's normally stern face broke into a fiendish grin. Yeah, mightness. I sailed with bad ones in good old days. The wildcat stroked his whiskers reflectively. I'll wager you did, my friend. For Goral, those sea rat brothers I had stripped of their rank. Tell the guards to bring them up from the dungeons. Fetch food from the kitchens, too. Good food, not fish heads and stewed grass. Rip Fang and Doomeye thought they were being brought in front of Ungat Trun because he had decided on a slow, agonizing death for them. They kicked, bit, and struggled with the guards as they were hustled into the wildcat's chamber. No beast was more surprised than they when Ungat ordered their chains removed and the guards dismissed. Panting and rubbing their limbs where the manacles had been, they sat on the floor, their sly eyes flicking from the food to their ruler. Ungat Trun nodded toward the tray, which contained a flagon of damson wine and the last of Blench's fruit scones. You must be hungry. Eat. They stared at him, openly suspicious. Karangul sipped from the flagon and bit off a piece of scone. Eat? Food not poison? Like a pair of ravening wolves, the two rats fell upon the food, stuffing it down and slopping wine. Ungat Trun lectured them as they crammed the victuals into their mouths. By rights, you should be dead now, both of you. Did you think I was fooled by your lies about Grottle and the other two? Maybe you did slay them and throw their bodies into the pool, but not because they insulted me, as you said. No, you killed them for some reason best known only to yourselves. I could have had you executed, but I chose instead to have you locked up and starved until I decided what I should do with you both. Rip Fang looked up, a mess of chewed scone falling from his lips. So, you ain't having us done away with? Thank ye, Cap'n, or, I mean, your mightiness. Oh, don't thank me. Thank them. Ungat's paw was pointing up to the spiders. End of side 6. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.